This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
I've received several tweets. Apparently, people don't understand what happened to you and I this year with the Survivor Pool haze. But they're saying my boy Jerry Goff may be on thin ice. And I do not care because he is no longer my boy.
Now you hate his guts?
Oh my God, do I hate his guts. Me and Hayes, we were literally planning a victory parade in the Survivor Pool. And Jerry Goff and the Rams go out there and they lose to the Jets. And then we're out.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Jerry Goff, A, is not my boy, and I don't care if he's never seen again in the NFL.
That was week 14, wasn't it?
Oh, it was worse than that, Noodles. It was
15.
I think it was 16.
No,
Yeah, I think it was.
Oh, Rappler, check that.
We were deep into the season. I think
Hayes had a game plan mapped out. He's like,
it was 16. Because week 15, we took Seattle at home against New York. 16 was the Rams. That was a layup. And then we were going to take Tampa at Detroit, and then Tennessee, I think, against Jacksonville or Houston in week 17. It was a lock. And it was happening, and I was going to buy new chairs for everybody, and we had big plans. And Jerry Goff, your boy.
Jerry Goff.
He's not my boy.
Ruined our dreams, basically.
Well, apparently he's on thin. I just got some tweets saying your boy Goff is on thin ice, and I'm like, wow. I do not care.
For what? Like, based on his security in L.A.?
I guess the quarterback carousel is going to start now with, you know, Stafford. Is he going to go to Indy? Is he going to go to San Fran? Some people are saying is a good fit. So who knows what's going to happen in the NFL?
Well, listen, it's never been more clear in the NFL that if you don't have a top five quarterback, you've got no shot.
It's
probably always been the case, but you got to have
it. I can't believe you made it to week 16 and that guy rinsed you.
Against the New York Jets, Noodles. Historically one of the worst teams in history. The Jets were 0-14 or whatever it was at that point, 0-13.
No, it's ridiculous.
And not only did they win, they never were leading the game. Like, the Rams were chasing it. They were down 10 or 13 nothing, like 7 minutes into the game.
I remember that. It was like 10 Cobb, and our Twitter was blowing up, Overdrive's Twitter, because you guys must have announced it or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
And
but
with assurances, like, we were cocky for the first time. We're like,
we
this
weren't
is
even
a lock.
Thinking about it. We were saying, okay, every time we had the Jets as the team that was going down, we were looking ahead because I think Vegas gave us a scare against the Jets. They came back and had a miracle comeback. Yep. But every other time, it was like automatic loss. Automatic.
Wow.
That's right. Oh. I mean,
I got to openly admit here, guys. I'm using Dr. Hose right now, and my back is so sore. Have you ever had that, this Dr. Hose thing?
My brother swears by it. I have not used it, but I've heard nothing but positive feedback, 100% positive feedback.
It's so weird because I got it for Christmas, and I just started dipping into it. I don't mind it, but, it's just because you can't go see your therapist. You can't go see people right now. So you're just trying to do things on. Back's a little sore. I've got the Dr. Hose on.
Shout out
and
to
it's
Dr.
biting.
Ho.
It's biting. Like, oh. It's, I don't know if I got it too high or something.
That's what it will do, man. And it'll spasm on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially. And you're just going to yelp out at some point between now and the end of the show. Scare the hell out of O.I.
I've been, like, turning my chair, trying not to when it, like, kicks in, but... Hey, right. It is what it is. We're getting old.
Yeah, we are. No, that's a reality, and that's the truth. And Ray's coming up here in a moment, and we were talking about, like, quarterbacking. I'm glad you brought that up because I just saw stats where Tom Brady's first 10 years in the league compared to his second 10 years, and they basically mirror each other. Like, it's
scary,
just
dude.
It's unparalleled. Like, both careers would be considered arguably the greatest career in NFL history, and he's done it times two. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking more about it, you know, based on what we were talking about with Rodgers. And I said this yesterday, that Rodgers' playoff history and his statistics and his win-loss record is pretty much equivalent to Peyton Manning, John Elway, you know, guys like Marino, like a lot of all-time great Brett Favre's. Comparing anyone to Tom Brady really is just completely unfair. And even what we just discussed, as much as he is not as clutch as Brady, He's nowhere close to as clutch as Brady. There are other quarterbacks, I think, in the history of the game that have put up better numbers and that have been in a position to win a game on their own late in the game, where Rodgers hasn't done that as much, especially in recent years. But maybe we need to check ourselves in a way, because if we're comparing anyone to Brady, they lost. Like, they just lost.
Right.
And especially if you're talking about clutch and winning and getting things done in the fourth quarter. Like, it just – it's a completely unfair comparison.
The only guy that can ever say anything to Brady is Eli Manning, saying, hey, I met you in the Super Bowl twice and I won both.
And I got both. I got and Nick Foles. Like, those are the three guys – the two guys that have beat him, Eli Manning twice and Nick Foles.
Rick Foles.
Those are the only two quarterbacks who can look at Brady and say, we got you.
Joining
us down the Maple Toyota hotline here is Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. What's happening, Ray?
He's sitting around, you know, listening to you guys debate this point. We've only got 2 weeks of Super Bowl talk, so.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we got a lot of content here, buddy.
Hayes brought up this crazy stat, though. Like, tell him the stat. Like, I'm still in disbelief of it.
Honestly, Noodles, I've been following this guy all day because he's been responding to people. Someone on Twitter who's a stats guy, an NFL guy, he co-hosts a podcast. And anyway, he found this stat on Aaron Rodgers. And Ross Tucker, who's a big NFL analyst, tweeted this out. Rodgers is 0-42 in his career when trailing by more than a point in the fourth quarter against a team with a winning record. So it sounds very...
That doesn't seem possible.
Doesn't seem possible. That's what we're all like, we're reading this out, and it's like, are we perpetuating some fake news, bogus stat that someone's trying to goof on? But I think it's legit. The guy's been defending it all day. People keep coming back at him with different games, and he's like, no, that team went 7-9.
It's
that
so
team
weird.
Was 6-10.
Because Rodgers is like the haymaker, like was a Hail Mary specialist.
Hail Mary King.
Yeah,
Hail Mary
like
King.
I don't understand that. That's so weird.
And this is, again, I love Rodgers, and I take him on my team any day of the week. I love him as a player, and he has won a Super Bowl, and he's going to get another MVP. But that's a stat, Ray, where you look at it, and it's I don't know how you defend it. It's a team sport, but that's not a great look.
Well, just think of all the crappy quarterbacks that have won 5 times.
Right.
Like, you know, like that have, in that scenario, that, you know, threw a pass, a guy rumbled for 15 yards and they kicked a field goal. Right? Like, whatever. And you're like, how could that be?
Like, that, Ray, that who was your hockey version of that? Who was that one hockey player where you were like, this guy's so good, but I just, either he's not going to win or he doesn't win or he just can't figure it out?
Oh. I wondered early if Mario Lemieux was ever going to win.
Really?
He was so good, right? And, like, the first couple of years, Pittsburgh was a train wreck. Like, they were awful.
Yeah, they were.
And I'm like, we were drafted, we were, funnily enough, up for the Canadian Hockey League Player of the Year at the same time, so I got to know him a little bit, and so I followed him really close, and I was like, man, I don't know if they're ever going to win. And then all of a sudden, you know, of course, they win twice, should have won a third time. And, you know, but he was the one that I think, I thought of early and thought, like, I wonder if he's ever going to win. Now, in Toronto, of course, it's Sundin, right? But because he was so good. And it just never happened. I mean, in the team sports stuff, it's hard to... I know we all, you know, like, they never won. They couldn't do this. They couldn't push him over the top, but... You know, there's when there's so many other people involved in the success, I find it hard to hang it on one guy.
Ray, you brought up Mario, and I was talking to Steph today, and she asked me this question. Like, it's Gretzky's 60th, right? Was he 60 today or
today,
yesterday?
Yep.
Okay. So she was saying, you know, Gretzky's the greatest player that ever lived, and she said to me, she's like, do you think Gretzky's records will ever be broken? And I said, I don't think so. Obviously, McOvey's screwed now because he, you know, he's missing half seasons, two seasons in a row, and, you know, suspension and all of that. But I thought about it, and this is more for all of us. The way we evaluate players now is different than just points, because Gretzky, I think he's the greatest player who ever played. Now, there are other people that say Bobby Orr. Mario Lemieux, I think, would be in that conversation, too. That's why I brought it up, because...
Oh, for sure.
He was ridiculous in his prime. And I think injuries and cancer and all of the things that he went through. But I guess my question to everyone is, the way we evaluate players now is just not points. It's on success. It's how rounded of a player you are. Do you think there's ever a player that would have a chance to be in that same conversation, not getting 2,800 points and 92?
But considered
92.
The greatest of all time.
Exactly.
Like, is that moniker even accessible?
Exactly. Like, that's, I guess that's,
I think it should be. I don't think it's a good thing for the sport if it's not. Like, what's
okay,
the point?
But he had 2,800 points. So say somebody gets 1,500 points.
Right.
How are you going to put them in the same conversation?
But that's, I guess, and I'm just bringing it closer
to
home.
I'm agreeing more with you, Noodles, than, like Brian said, no, maybe we should. And I'm like, but if the guy's 1,300 points short.
Right. It
doesn't make sense to me.
We had a debate earlier a couple weeks ago about Matthews and Draisaitl. Draisaitl had 30 more points than Matthews, but Matthews had some more goals and even strength and all that.
Jamie, you also added in Draisaitl was way better than Matthews.
I said that he had 30 more points than Matthews last year. I didn't say he's way better.
But maybe you're answering the question right there.
That's my point. I'm trying to bring this up. Is like our evaluation of players and people have changed over the years, not just cut and dry this. And that comes with analytics. It comes with, you know, other things, intangibles. So I don't know
also,
if that...
also winning. I mean, you got to give credit to Gretzky. Won 4 Cups. Maybe he'd be in a different position if he wasn't on that dynasty and he won only one. Maybe we look at him differently. I doubt it because of the points. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, I don't think it's a... Like, I think baseball is a victim of that. Like, no one could be as great as Babe Ruth. He played 100 years ago. Like, maybe Mike Trout can be. You know, and Gretzky isn't as dated. Gretzky was playing 30 years ago. But... I don't, you know, I think we need to adjust with the times. And you got to win a lot to put yourself in that position. But
okay,
it's not going to be easy.
Last night I was scrolling through Twitter, and I don't know why it was there, but it was a play that Roberto Clemente, the great Pirate right fielder, made. And it was a ball that went into the corner. He picked it up off the wall. He was on the track. And this is in 1972. And he threw a bullet strike to the plate. Well, nobody's better than that. Like, in that play, Clemente had 3,000 hits and then was killed in a plane crash. Like, you could still be one of the greatest of all time, even from then, adjust for some of the analytics that can be put together for stats. But it's easier to do that baseball compared to hockey.
Right. I guess it's a reaching topic. It's just I'm wondering in, you know, our lifetime, if we're just looking at it like, you know, I had the luxury of seeing Gretzky up close and personal, playing against him and growing up watching him. But then, you know, does McDavid have a chance, even though he's never going to get 200 and what? What did Gretzky have, 212 points in a season?
215, I think, was where he topped out, 98 goals.
So that's just not going to happen
in
today's game.
No, it's not possible. Because the game has improved so much. Goaltending has improved.
Goaltending. But that's my point. Is that it? Like, Gretzky's the greatest player
I don't think it's time? I don't think it is. I don't think it should be. I mean, it should be an incredibly high mountain to reach.
Right.
You know, it shouldn't just be, well, this is my guy in this generation, so I'm going to pick it. Like,
shouldn't it be that if it is a McDavid – it could have been Crosby or whatever.
Right.
They have to be that much better than everybody else. It's not that the numbers are ever going to align, because they're not. But the simple fact was, you know, we can say the skating wasn't the same and the goalies weren't as good. Well, then why didn't somebody else score 92 goals?
Yep, that's true.
Right. Now you're
so
right.
Gretz was that much better than everybody else that he was playing against.
Right.
So that has to be the same, in my mind, the same sort of scenario to compare somebody today. Can they be in that conversation? Somebody might, sure. But, you know, Connor McDavid's got, I don't even know how many points he's got, but he's got to be that much better than everybody else for a long period of time to be in that conversation.
That's
going to be hard to do.
That's my point, is, you know, it just, the argument against Gretzky is if a guy gets 1,500 points and is ridiculous, you know, Gretzky still has him beat by 1,300 points. Like, how do you argue that?
No,
you know,
but,
like,
but here's you're not wrong. Where you okay. might counter is with, and again, it can't happen in this era. Gretzky had 92 goals. Hull had 86 one year. It's not like Gretzky had 40 more than anyone in history. Like, there were guys. Bernie Nichols had 72 one year back in the 80s, I believe, early 90s.
With Gretzky in LA,
yeah. It's just, you know, there were a lot of guys who were scoring a lot of goals.
Yep.
And, you know, you look at the most points of all time. I'm looking at it right now in a solo season. Gretzky owns the top four, and all by the age of 24. I believe McDavid is 24 right now. And he had 215, 212, 208, 205, which is crazy. And then
sorry, that's funny to me.
It's insane. And then Mario steps in to stop his streak with 199, and then back to Gretzky with 196, 183. Like, it's just every like the top 15 seasons of all time. Like, Gretzky's got like 12 or 13 of them, and it's outrageous what he did. But I also think what has changed, and you guys can speak to it better than I can, just based on age, is the amount of analysis today. And the urge to pick holes in players' games may not allow for that either.
Yeah, we're not doing liberos of Gretzky backtracking.
Gretzky was just a god. That's it. Everyone agrees,
yeah,
a god. I'm sure we could have picked out a couple of games where we're like, that was a Pierre-Luc Dubois shift from 99. Just kind of tooting around and went for a lazy change. But now you do it, you're going to get buried on SportsCenter. You know, you're not allowed to take any shifts off in today's overanalyzed sporting world.
Ray, you could speak to this, but how many times would your back check include just basically hooking onto a guy in the neutral zone and riding back with him?
Noodles, I would look, I'm not even kidding, I would look for Brad Marsh.
Snowshoeing out there.
He was not going anywhere. You give him a little hook and he'd go, yeah, yeah. In other words, like, not just him, but like the point was, I'm not going anywhere. Those were the guys, and your responsibility only was, if I wasn't the first guy back, which I wasn't going to be most times, my responsibility was their D-man. And so I only had to go as far as the blue line, because he wasn't going in deep.
Oh,
no chance.
God. Ray, how about when you're center ice and you play with the couple wingers that, it was a golden rule, first guy back goes down low and does the dirty work. I love the wingers that would stop at the blue line and just start looking around like a stork, like they had no idea where they were, and they would just wait for you to pass them to go down low. That drove me nuts.
They weren't even going to try. They're like, I'm not going down there. It's way too hard down there. When I, late in my career, I got moved to the wing, and outside of the D running you on the wall, I was like, this is a piece of cake.
No kidding. I loved it, too. It's like, all I got to do is jump in and out of holes, get open, score the odd goal, and it's just, it was a cakewalk. It was so fun.
But, the first game I played was in the Boston Garden, and someone rolled a little donut around the wall, and the defenseman, I could hear him, like, snorting like a bull coming down the wall. I'm like, this is not going to end up well. And of course, and then the bench, get it out! Get it out!
I'm trying
to save my life here, man.
Get it out!
That's a great point that, again, wingers, you know, they always get dumped on, like, you don't do this, you don't do that.
Yeah.
It's exclusively a winger's job when some guy rings one around the boards, and it's like, if you didn't get it out, you're scum. You're
soft scum. Roller, too.
You're soft, and you're not a team player. It's just outrageous.
You're so right. Like, and some of those mutant – like, can you imagine Ken Danico just pinching down, and you know that it's just a bull, and he wants you. And it's a slow roller coming to you, and you've got to absorb
contact. And if they wanted to take your head off, they'll chomp the minus for it because it's worth it to them. It's like your head on a platter is worth me taking a minus right now.
And your defenseman's yelling, snap out of it. Like, wake up. Get it out.
There's another part to that play, too, is when the D rolls this little softy around the boards as it's coming around. He can see the D pinching, and the guy that rolled it around the boards yells, heads up. Really?
Thank you. Thanks for that invitation for me to get crushed by this guy coming down the boards. Where do you stand on the Matthew Tkachuk has to be addressed tonight by the Maple Leafs. Do you think anything's going to happen there because he fell on Campbell a couple of nights ago?
No, I don't. I don't think so. But I mean, I guess it could be. My view. I saw Carlo's tweet. Did he fall on him on purpose? Absolutely. Did it lots. That my play was to fall on the goalie. When the guy cross-checked you in front, is just kind of fall backwards, and you land on top of him, and then you say sorry right away so he doesn't paste you with his blocker, right, on the way up. Did he try to hurt him? I don't think so at all. Not even like one thought of that. But I think he was trying to jump on top of him.
Yeah. I said yesterday it's more about this kind of new image the Leafs are trying to portray, that they're tougher and they're in it together and they've got a long-term goal. I think that has more to do with it than the actual, you know,
now,
play itself.
Now, my understanding, though, Brian, is like, and just from watching the game, Noodles, you would know for sure, but didn't he hurt himself, like, kind of against the post?
Oh, yeah. That's not what injured him. That's not what injured Campbell. I wonder if Simmons and or Bogosian, one of them, is like, we got to do what Edmondson did a couple nights ago.
Maybe so. But if I'm Tkachuk, I mean, you don't have to accept the deal either.
No. I wouldn't.
And I wouldn't be crazy about accepting a Wayne Simmonds invitation.
No, we also said yesterday, Ray, who's your Lucic could be an X factor too, saying, you guys want to screw around with Tkachuk, then okay, someone's getting hurt then because I'll pick who I want to deal with. That could squash the whole plan too.
I mean, like, you got to, you know, there is this, you know, Myers and Edmondson fought the other day, but if you're fighting somebody like Wayne Simmonds, that could turn out bad. Like, I know he's a little older, but he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And so if Tkachuk gets in a fight and Simmonds lands one on him because he's better at it than Tkachuk is, well, you might end up losing one of your best guys for a long period of time. Times are different. In back when we started, that would have been something that would have had to been done. But, I think you're right that, you know, Lucic isn't out there cruising around just, you know, trying to look for apples, right?
Yeah, that wouldn't be ideal. that you know, it's one thing to be like, we're a new team and everything. Then all of a sudden, Lucic taps you on the shoulder, and all of a we're good. It's all good.
But Hayes, you said this too yesterday. Like, Tkachuk isn't, like, Simmonds is farther down in the lineup to Tkachuk. Tkachuk's a very unique player. Like, he's a, you know, he's a top line winger. He's close to being a superstar, mm-hmm. and you know, he's more valuable to the Flames being on the ice. But he might, you know, he's got a lot of pride. He might be a guy that says, okay, you know, you don't like what I did, I'll fight you. But then again, you know,
they need numbers, to win tonight.
Then the mutant comes over the boards, and Lucic goes, okay, well, you fought that guy, I'm going to choose who I want too. And then
a lot of guys start tying their own skate laces.
Yeah, exactly. We're good. It's all good.
Yeah,
it's all
I'm not good interested here. In this. Yeah,
it's going to be. It should be a fun game tonight. I mean, this sets up for Calgary to have a bit of a bounce back. And we were talking about this in the last hour, Ray, where I thought it was an impressive win on Sunday, based on the circumstances. The Leafs have played a lot of games in a short period of time. Flew across the country. 2 p.m. start. Kind of an impressive. Wow, you got one when maybe we didn't think you were going to get one. I think tonight would be even more telling maybe about their maturity and where they're going, because you're almost playing with house money. You know, you're walking out of Calgary 500, regardless of what happens tonight. You got your game on Sunday, and I think a lot of teams this year in particular, based on the nature of the schedule, will probably get caught night two, in part because the opposition is going to be more motivated, going to look for a bounce back. But I think mentally you might think, hey, we got one. You know, we're 500 on the road. Let's move up to Edmonton and see what happens up there. I think if the Leafs come out flying tonight and pick up a win, I think it would be telling, and I think it would be as impressive, if not more impressive, than that win on Sunday.
Their ability to kind of scratch out and claw out a little bit of a win here a couple of times already has been kind of impressive to me. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know that would have been as possible in the past. Now, it doesn't mean that they've solved all their problems and anything or everything, but that was kind of an ugly game on the weekend. The three goals they scored were, you know, lucky and all that stuff, but they did what they had to do. They had a good goaltending performance, And they're going to have to play better today because I would think Calgary, you know, 5 days off coming into that game, I think Calgary will be better too tonight. It'll be a better game to watch tonight. And Edmonton will have to, Toronto will have to climb their level higher against Calgary to try and get a second game. I think they'll have to play better to win because when they go to Edmonton, it's like the sweep or the, you know, the slate gets swept away and you start all over again with this new series. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be pretty interesting. What if you get 3 points out of here? That'd be awesome.
That's pretty good.
Go on and move it along. Right? Yep. I mean, it's going to be hard to beat teams consecutively, in particular on the road, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And, you know, we keep focusing on the Canadian division, which we're going to do a lot. But St. Louis, Vegas tonight, Pietrangelo back up against his old team. And that's going to be a fun game to watch. And there are some storylines down there. I was talking about this over the weekend with my dad. Lafreniere is not off to the greatest start for a rookie that was getting a lot of hype. Understandably so, and I'm not writing him off or anything crazy like that, but he's kind of just easing his way into it. He's not doing
much. He's got feathers. He's got no points.
I know, but the hardest part, the worst thing you could have done in your opening night is face the New York Islanders where they just put sand on the ice. Like, the Islanders are the most blanketing team I've ever seen. Like, right now, in modern day, right now, the way that they play, there is no room on the ice. Like, they are so well coached and so disciplined within their system. Like, there is no space out there whatsoever.
I happened to watch that game. I want to say the Rangers had, like, two, maybe three good chances.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing.
Yeah.
What do you do with them, Ray, if this keeps up for Lafreniere? Like, do you
just say... Well, there's nothing he can do. There's nowhere he can go.
Yeah.
I know. Right? You sit him down, or I don't know, that would piss him off.
Well,
who knows?
I mean, I guess they ran into this a little bit last year with Kako, and they've, you know, you've got exciting young players with good potential, and the league might just be a little bit ahead of them at the start. I think you got to keep running them out there because you don't have other options, but sitting them out and playing them infrequently, I don't think that's the way to go either.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It's a full slate of games again tonight. It's going to be fun, and we'll see what happens. Yeah. Leafs Calgary, and we'll go from there. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5:05.
Talk to you then, boys. Later.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom remains open by appointment only, or you can shop and buy online at mapletoyota.com to receive rates from 0%. Raptors with a loss last night. We'll get back into that. Ramona Shelburne in about an hour on different storylines throughout the NBA. Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, just after 6 o'clock. And, again, the Leafs are in action tonight. There's some news around Major League Baseball. There's a lot going on out there. And we'll continue to break it all down. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Ramona Shelburne from ESPN in about an hour. Her take on the Raptor game last night. The Raps, they were chasing it all night. And Kyle Lowry struggled again. I mean, his offense and some of his instincts just have not been there all year. And I know he's a little bit banged up. He's not at 100%, but his shooting percentage last night was awful. And it's been an issue. You know, it's been a problem where this is a team that lacks depth, and they need their best players to basically perform almost as well as they can perform on a nightly basis to make sure that they stay consistent in the win column. And it didn't happen last night for Lowry. And as a result, you know, the Raptors were chasing it, didn't get the win last night. I'm not surprised.
No, and you hope he can have some pride and say, I still want to be – there's two things where he can say, I still want to be an impact player every night, or he's going to say, I got the street cred to just say, I want a championship here, and I can go out there, and whatever happens, happens, and you just deal with that. And I just hope that that's not the approach because
– Yeah, I don't see it with him.
I don't think that's his DNA. No. I don't think he's a guy that – We'll just mail it in. He might get frustrated. He got frustrated last night. Didn't he get the gate?
Yep.
Yeah,
he wasn't
the gate
happy.
At the end.
Because he's not playing that well. Like that's
right.
He's really not playing that well. There's more focus on other areas of the team, which there should be. I have full faith that Lowry will figure this out. He's still defending well. He's still going to draw charges. But he's been that much more kind of yappy with the refs this year, which is saying something because he's always been an animated guy. But he doesn't look like himself out there. He doesn't look like he's overly happy with the way things are going.
Dude, no kid anymore either. 35 years old.
Yeah, he's getting up there in age. He's got a lot of miles on him. He's played a lot of minutes, you know, over the last handful of years, 7, 8 years. But if he's not rolling, You know, it just it doesn't matter what Aaron Baines is doing. If Kyle isn't pulling his weight, his team just is not deep enough, good enough to be able to get over that. But with that loss last night, they're still 5-2 in their last seven games. You know, there's still been more positives lately than there have been negatives. So we'll get into that more with Ramona Shelburne in about an hour. Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, in about a half an hour. I was reading earlier today, CBS has the rights to the, what is it, the Farmers this weekend, I think, at Torrey Pines.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be implementing some new broadcasting, I guess, tools to the lineup. They got some new music, which doesn't matter to anybody. They're going to permanently have a leaderboard up. Yeah, I guess they've had the same, like, golf intro music forever.
Oh, as far as the actual television.
Yeah, the actual, like, telecast is going to have it. They're just sharpening it up. They're trying to, you know, renew a couple of things. Whatever. It, completely irrelevant. Doesn't matter that they have new music. Point I'm getting to is they are going to start this weekend doing something that other sports have been doing, primarily the NFL for a while. They're going to have a rules official available for, like, Nance and Faldo to call on when there's some potential rule infraction. And I just can't see how this is going to possibly work.
I don't know. I don't care to possibly hear from the rules guy during any game.
No, I don't think it works in the NFL.
Like, that's what fans like to do. They like to look at it, hear from the analyst to hear their two cents. Then they form an opinion, and they either scream at the TV or say, great job, ref.
You don't like it in the NFL where they cut to that, like,
no,
that ref in
the booth? No, because I think he gets it wrong half the time. He's always like, this has got to come back, clearly. And then 2 seconds later, play stands, moving on with the game. It's like, dude, who are you as a rules official? You don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I will say one thing about golfers. The average golfer, the hacks like you and I, Hayes, we should get way more drops than we actually know that we can get. Like, I think it was DeChambeau last year that was like, there's ants in this hole right here near my golf ball. And people were like, what the hell are you talking? And the guy gave him relief. Like, animal holes or different, like, drainage things. These guys get drops. Well, there was a situation, I think it was Nick Taylor last week in Hawaii. He's like, well, this fence is here. And the guy's like, yeah. So what? It's a fence. What do you want me to do with it? He's like, well, I want to hit the shot left-handed. And he didn't want to hit the shot left-handed. But then the refs or the officials like, okay, I guess you get relief from
it. That
was
a brilliant play. It was a brilliant play because they told
him. So it's like the amateur has no idea about that stuff, though. They just start chopping it around and hitting redonkulous shots where you actually probably get relief.
You're probably right. In the rules book, for anyone that plays amateur sports, you don't know every possible rule of every sport, but we haven't seen this in the NHL that I'm aware of. Like, maybe another network has done this, but Noodles, you've been calling a game for a long time. You've never gone to it. Like, Kerry Fraser's not sitting there waiting for you and Gordon.
He used to be in studio,
but that was during the playoffs. But honestly, a lot of times we're the same way. It's our opinion. We're subject to get it wrong, but it's like the one thing I struggle with when it's a bang-bang play, goaltender interference is the one I struggle with right now because there is no consistency with it. What I think to what you both think is different. And, you know, now it's basically open to interpretation where it's not cut and dry. Puck over the glass. Now the offside rule, by the way, I think it's a fantastic adjustment. I haven't seen too many challenges. Have you guys in the game?
No, there doesn't seem to be a lot of them.
Right. There was one the other night in Vancouver, and Travis Green knew he screwed up
away. He was pissed, man. The guy told him to do it, and then he said, okay, we'll challenge it. And then he looks at it. I thought his eyes were going to pop out of his head.
You can't
tell.
Because
he looked at assistant coach, was like, what the hell are you doing? That wasn't offside.
Yeah, it was clearly a tag-up situation. But that's... You know,
but
as
a rules official in the booth isn't going to help with that.
No, and you know what? Like, a lot of times, for the most part, I think we know the meat of the rules. There are some obscure ones where it's like, you know. But for the most part, I think we're all schooled enough as fans and analysts and all that to go, yeah, you know, the rules here.
Well,
like, I don't know.
That's the difference here. Like, maybe in golf it could work a little bit because there is nuance to the rule book that the average person, like O just pointed out, is not familiar with. You know, let me explain to you why this is, you know, this is happening where, he's in the line of sight of some blah, 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 and he's going to move it, and this makes sense, and I think it's, you know, the right call. What ends up happening in the NFL is they don't go to the rules official to explain the rule book. They go to him for an opinion on what the call should be while we're waiting for it. So it's basically just a hot take by a guy who used to ref.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's like, do you think that was a hold or not?
Like, and Hayes, in golf,
you know what holding is.
And the guy has no repercussions.
Nothing.
Like, that's the thing. He's sitting in the booth. If he's wrong,
wrong. Flipping a coin, I'm going to go with a hold on that one.
And how many times are you actually going to use this guy in golf? Like, I think this guy is not going to – he can have beers if he wants. I don't think he's going to be used. If you think about watching a golf broadcast, I can think of one situation, Hayes. Maybe you have one that sticks out. But Tiger took a drop in the Masters that was a bad drop, and he should have got penalized for it. Mm-hmm. And they were at the no balls open. They didn't want to do anything about it. I would like to hear a guy there. But other than that, if it's not a group that – if it's not amongst the leaders, what are they going to have a guy that's going to miss the cut who dropped near the water and didn't get a proper relief? Nobody cares.
Nobody cares about that.
I can't see this guy being any kind of factor in the broadcast.
You're right, though. The only way this is going to be an actual upgrade and compelling television is if the guy calls out players for rules infractions. Like,
yes.
If this guy just follows Patrick Reed around and goes, yes, guys, you know, bring me in here. I got a scoop. This guy blatantly just – you know, grounded his club in the bunker.
If Patrick Reed at the U.S. Open, or who was it? John Rahm at the Memorial last year.
Right.
There was a situation where everyone was like, man, your ball moved on 16. Did you see that? And he was like, not me. You need that guy live to go, look at that right there. That should be a penalty.
The reason that was a story was he had a 3-shot lead on Sunday.
And
to your point, if that happens with some plug on Friday, he's going to miss the cut by 7
strokes.
Nobody cares. You're not wasting your time with that anyway. So I just, you know, it's almost overproducing. And I think there was a part of it when the NFL introduced, you know, an official in the booth that you could go to. It was different. It felt different. There was an element of, you know, a refreshing new broadcast feature. You're like, that's kind of cool.
Football. I like it.
I just think, I think the guy's just telling you what he thinks should be the call. You know, like, I don't learn anything.
It would be better if the broadcast went to, like, let's go to Rick in Keswick.
Right. He's had 48 beers, and Rick's going to tell us whether or not he thinks that
should
be
passing
interference.
Do you not like the NFL analyst because he generally doesn't offer up much of opinion? Do you want him to say, this guy butchered that right there? That's got to be passing interference.
Yes, that would be great. No, what I'm saying is he is giving opinion, but I don't care. Like, Aikman can give me the opinion is my point.
Right.
Is, you know, Romo can tell me whether or not he thinks that this was a pass interference or not, whether or not that was a hold. Just because you're a ref doesn't mean that you have an abundance of information on a play we all just saw live. You know, you'll know the rule book. So if you're going to a rule where you're like, can you explain this, then it's a huge benefit to have. It's going to be hugely beneficial. But just telling me whether or not you think it's pass interference or not, you know, Romo just said it, Nance said it, Aikman said it, Buck said it. And in 2 seconds, we're going to find out whether or not the ref on the field believes he got it right or wrong.
I agree.
I'm not sure how much it brings.
I think if there's something informational that brings another layer to the broadcast, no problem. But if it's just another opinion from somebody who is not an analyst, who is not a former player or not, you know, somebody who's really sharp as an analyst, then it's just another guy. Like, there are some obscure rules. You know, correct me if I'm wrong. You remember the crazy Jays game, I think, that all of us were at? That third base rule.
Yes.
Like, that was like a crazy rule that I didn't understand.
Absolutely. That was when Russell Martin threw the ball back and it hit the bat and it was a live ball. And everyone was like, what is this?
Right. But that's where you could be like, you go to, you know, a rules guy and he explains in, you know, section 89.3.
Absolutely.
This is, but it's not like, geez, I thought that should have happened. That's everyone's opinion. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
We were all sitting there with 50 beers in us going, what the hell's going on down there? And why is it taking 40 minutes?
Well, it's interesting that this was CBS that is doing this. And I'm not surprised because it seems like every network is doing this more and more. In American sports, like, they're adding elements to the booth. They're trying to spice up their broadcast. And I get it. I get why it is compelling. I understand why it originally was. But CBS had a guy named Mike Carey, who was their NFL ref in the booth. and this was a couple of years ago, and I'm not kidding you, he was batting like below the Mendoza line. Like they would go to him, like Nance would go to him and say, "All right, Mike, what do you think? Is this going to be a hold or not?" And he'd be like, "Gotta say, I don't see how this should hold up. There's no way." 2 seconds later, play stands, moving on. Like he was wrong all the time. To the point where they actually moved on from him. But it was like a running bit. You're like, you got to see Mike Carey. He's probably going to go, I don't know, 1 for 8 during the broadcast.
Do you think there'd be a prop bet in Vegas about this guy's? I guarantee you there would be like some crazy prop bet in Vegas to see if this guy gets the right call or not. I think there it would be fantastic.
Well, exactly. And I guess it comes down to what you're employing. Is he there to interpret the rule? Is he there to tell you how he would call it? Right?
But right.
What's the difference between him saying that and Romo saying that? Or Aikman saying it? You know?
Right.
Ultimately, it's not going to change what is about to happen.
Yeah, but for golf is – I've watched golf for 12 hours straight, man, and I've never seen one situation where it's like – a lot of times, it should be, if they want to talk about pace of play and keep things moving, if the two players agree on what the ruling they come up with, then it's just, that's a go. No rule official, no nothing. If your competitor says, I agree with what you're doing, then go ahead, it's allowed.
Just follow Patrick Reed around, and I'm good. Like, I think that would be worth the price.
Dude, Peter Costas sewered that guy when that nonsense happened in the Bahamas. Peter Costas came out and said, I have seen him improve his lie numerous times, fluffing it in the rough. I'm like, Peter,
what's
you're
wrong
coming
with,
that? With the? I agree with it. I was happy, but I'm like, why didn't you call him out right after the tournament, go to the camera and say, I saw Patrick Reed fluff his ball in the rough on 15. He should not win this tournament. Because he said it.
Stones,
he goes,
man.
I saw, like, I couldn't believe I heard it with my own ears. He was like, I've seen Patrick Reed on numerous occasions when no one was around, fluff it in the rough. I'm like, dude, don't kid yourself. All the guys in golf, everyone says it's code of honor. There has been guys that when they go deep in the woods and they know there's not a camera,
of course,
they are playing footsie in there.
Of course. It's a business at the end of the day. Like, integrity is important.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me there have not been countless players on every tour where the winner clearly cheated at some point over the four rounds.
I would love that, though. I actually respect that more. Like, but the crazy ones. Remember years ago, the person who won the New York City Marathon? Like, took the cab.
Took the cab. Yeah.
Like, so outrageous where you get busted. Like, yeah, that was me.
That, I can't even argue with that. You got me.
Yeah.
Very quality investigative
work. There
should
be a top 10, like, crazy cheaters list.
Okay, well, I'll bet you we can find it. We'll get to it in the next hour. Darren Dreger in about 20 minutes, our Hockey Insider. Ramona Shelburne on the Raptors game last night, the NBA news and notes, and a year without Kobe Bryant. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, so Darren Dreger's coming up in about 15 minutes, and early into the 6 p.m. hour, we're going to hear about Cooperstown and who is or who isn't going into the Hall of Fame. And I have to believe someone's going to get there and get enough votes to get in. But there has been some discussion that it's just not a good enough field for the voters that aren't going to put in, you know, alleged steroid users. So if you're not going to vote for Bonds or Clemens or Schilling, et cetera, then the rest of the options don't scream Hall of Fame necessarily.
So no one's going in?
No, there's going to be some people going in, but it may not be a long list. And what's going to be intriguing is whether or not Bonds gets in and or Clemens. You know, that's basically what it comes down to every single year.
Where do you stand on those two?
I'd put them in.
I'd put them in too.
And I would acknowledge, you know, the accusations and what was going on in the era that they played in, but I'd put them in. For sure.
If you're going to put them in, don't let them go in there with no logo on their baseball hat or some stupid asterisk. Like, Barry Bonds took roids. Everybody in that era, a lot of players were taking roids. You still got to hit it out of the park. Same thing with Clemens. You still got to go on the mound and throw the heat. I don't know. But for some reason, I just feel like those two guys, if there's other guys, I'm just like...
Schilling's more of a controversial guy because he's, what, like a right-wing guy. Is that why?
I think maybe politics might play a factor in that. I'm not.
They should have nothing to do with his playing.
It should
career.
Have nothing to do with with any
you,
of.
We see in today's world how that goes. Like you know, if you are on one side or the other, you're separated now. That's it. Like you know, unfortunately, like you're right. Schilling. I thought I read something today that people. We're like, he has no chance because he was a Trump supporter or something, which that shouldn't factor in.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true for every single voter. I mean, there may be some people that just won't do it based on that. There may be, you know, it may be about his career. I would think he probably merits a Hall of Fame candidacy.
No question.
I mean, the guy's career was outstanding. But he also pitched during an era where some people wonder exactly what was going on. Basically, if you played between 95 and 05, and that was your prime, more or less, you just get painted with a brush of did he not, what was going on there. And I don't know what the case against Schilling would be outside of maybe some allegations that I'm not familiar with, maybe his politics, maybe his personal life.
Right.
But as a player, I would think he should get in, but I'm not sure he will. I don't think his numbers indicate that he will. But we'll know in the next 10 or 15 minutes. So we'll let you know what's going on with Cooperstown and who's going in and who isn't going in. And Ramona Shelburne of ESPN will join us, and Darren Dreger, our hockey insider. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA license 12616.
This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.